It's August 1970. The Isle of Wight Festival takes place in England for the third year in a row. This music festival is the biggest of its time, even bigger than the previous year's Woodstock. At least 600,000 people attended, and while the festival is a financial failure, it has become one of the most iconic musical moments of its time. With Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, The Doors, The Who, Joni Mitchell, Jethro Tull, Sly and the Family Stone, and Emerson, Lake, and Palmer performing. And while some artists reported booing and mistreatment from the crowds, those audience members may have performed differently if they knew what was to come in the next year. On September 18th, 1970, mere weeks after the festival ended, Jimi Hendrix died of a drug overdose at age 27. He was, and still is, regarded as one of the best guitarists ever, and the loss was a serious blow to the rock community. Just over 2 weeks later, on October 4th, 1970, Janis Joplin was found dead of a heroin overdose at age 27. She helped women gain more recognition in the world of rock and roll when they weren't really known in that genre. And almost a year later, on July 3rd, 1971, Jim Morrison, lead singer of The Doors, died of an unknown cause. He, too, was 27 years old. All three performed at the Isle of Wight Festival in 1970, died at age 27, and within a year of each other. Not only that, but Brian Jones, previous lead singer of the Rolling Stones, died at age 27 in 1969. Their deaths, along with the death of Nirvana frontman Kurt Cobain at 27, helped establish a 27 Club, or a group of famous musicians who died at the age of 27. Since then, it has gained several famous additions, such as Amy Winehouse, J. Michael Basquiat, and Frito Santana. However, it raises the question, is this all just a coincidence, or somehow related? Welcome to Episode 2 of A History of Modern Rock, Golden Years, in which we deconstruct the popular rock music of the 1970s.
Welcome back to the History of Modern Rock, where me and my partner, Ethan, take a look at rock music from 1970 to 1979, or the decade of the 1970s. This decade was maybe the best decade for rock ever, with stunning rock music coming out in every single year. Since there was so much happening at this time, this episode will not be in chronological order. Instead, we will be looking at different bands. We will look at their entire output during the 70s. We will, however, look at some major music trends during the 70s, such as punk, prog, and new wave. Finally, this episode will be split into two parts, artists from the 60s and artists new in the 70s. Without further ado, here is episode 2, Golden Years. First, let's get the elephant in the room out of the way, the Beatles. How could they follow up their impeccable 60s follow-up in the next decade? Well, as we discussed in the previous episode, the Beatles saw growing tension within the band rise up to the surface, within multiple band members leaving the band for periods of time during the late 60s. After Abbey Road was released, Paul McCartney, if not all the Beatles, saw what was inevitable and left the band for good in 1970. Soon after, all the Beatles broke up and officially began their solo careers. John Lennon's career was arguably the most successful, with classic albums such as Plastic on O Band, Imagine, and Double Fantasy, all being released in the 70s. His single Imagine, which called for global peace and acceptance, was ranked number 3 on the Rolling Stones' Best Songs of All Time list. And while there were a few missteps here and there, the decade ran smoothly for Lennon. Paul McCartney's, on the other hand, was more tumultuous. He earned criticism for critics for being too airy and light with his lyrics, and from fans for breaking up with the Beatles. However, his classic string of albums and singles in the 70s, including Band on the Run, showed that he could be both serious and goofy with his work, and a musician to watch in the coming decades. Even though his former bandmates were still making music, George Harrison found a chance to step out of their shadow. In 1970, Harrison released the triple album All Things Must Pass, featuring both new songs and songs he had proposed to the Beatles, but they had turned down. Also in 1971, George, along with his sitarist Ravi Shankar, courted the Concert of Bangladesh, one of the first and largest benefit concerts. The accompanying live triple album earned the Grammy Award for Album of the Year in 1973. All in all, it seems that George Harrison received the appreciation he deserved. One thing about the 70s is that while there were many new artists emerging, many of the 60s artists broke up or received much less success in the 70s. For example, the Beach Boys. After band leader Brian Wilson's psychological trauma, the Beach Boys never achieved the level of success they did in the mid-60s. Many bands dealt with personal or professional obstacles, and many did not survive. This concludes part one of the episode. While some artists in part two may have released some singles or albums in the 1960s, they didn't really attain their fame until now, in the 1970s. Now, welcome to part two. By the early 1970s, the Rolling Stones were a controversial group, banned from many countries and exiled from Britain in 1971 for not paying their taxes. The Stones fired their manager, Alan Klein, who had taken over from Oldham in 1966 and started their own record label, Rolling Stone Records. The Rolling Stones continued to write and record music, mixing punk and disco genres inspired by new band member Ron Woods. Keith Richards, the guitarist, was arrested in Toronto for heroin trafficking, resulting in legal limbo for 18 months. He was subsequently sentenced to perform a benefit concert for the blind. Richards then quit heroin. If you remember Yardbirds from the 60s episodes, you'll likely be familiar with the guitarist, Jimmy Page. Well, in 1968, they broke up, and Jimmy Page left to start a new band. His newfound fame led him to recruit some of the most up-and-coming musicians in Britain, most notably Robert Plant, a vocalist. They formed a band called Led Zeppelin in 1968 and released their debut self-titled album in 1969. Their next two albums, released in 1969 and 1970, respectively, were also self-titled, but it was their fourth album, Untitled, which made Led Zeppelin legends. Led Zeppelin's fourth album had no title, and the cover art had no band name on the front, or any indication that Led Zeppelin made this album. Nonetheless, it is one of the most iconic albums of all time. It features soft rock songs such as Going to California and harder songs such as Black Dog. But the big masterpiece of all time was Stairway to Heaven, one of the greatest song titles of all time. Clocking in at 8 minutes, it is an epic song which starts off slow and builds up to a grand rocking finale. This album established Led Zeppelin as the legends they are today and didn't stop. Led Zeppelin's next album, House of the Holly, featured initial controversial cover art, Naked Children, but the music inside made up for it. It was somewhat similar to Untitled, but also featured more musical evolution than it. Led Zeppelin would release three more albums in 1975, 1976, and 1978, called Physical Graffiti, Presence, and In Through the Outdoor. Along the way, the band would suffer some tragedy, including Robert Plant's son's death, but the band stuck together, at least until September 25th, 1980. John Bonham, the band's drummer and widely regarded as one of the best drummers of all time, died of alcohol poisoning at the age of 32. At that point, the band refused to go on without their loyal friend. To this day, Led Zeppelin are known as one of the best rock musicians ever, and who were as popular in the 70s as the Beatles were in the 60s. Led Zeppelin helped kick into place the arena rock genre, which was established after notable bands such as Led Zeppelin and Queen, Aerosmith, and many more influenced young rock bands whose main goal was to make music designed to fill stadiums full of fans. Early purveyors of this genre in the 70s included Foreigner, Styx, Boston, and more. This genre is also known as album-oriented rock, or dad rock, nowadays. This genre would continue into the 80s and 90s, and we'll discuss it more in the next episodes. Arena Walk would influence punk rock later in the 70s and alternative rock in the 90s. It was one of the leading rock genres in the 70s and still well known by younger people, whether they know it or not. If you think you don't, well, have you ever heard the song Renegade? More Than a Feeling? Highway to Hell? Well, those are all staples of the arena rock genre that have also featured many times in other media. Well, we can't discuss the 70s without mentioning certain artists, and halfway through the episode is a good time to cover those artists. First up, David Bowie. Bowie, originally named Davy Jones, changed his name to avoid confusion with the Monkees member. He gained relevancy with his single Space Oddity in the year of 1969, released when Apollo 11 carried the first humans to the moon. There began a decade-long winning streak in which there were so many classic albums and singles that it is almost too many to count. However, we can show the highlights from Bowie's 70s, and those highlights are 70s rock essentials. You see, Davy Bowie is known as a musical chameleon, and that kept him fresh, switching music styles and personalities seamless from album to album. Without further ado, here are the highlights from Bowie's 70s period. After Bowie's start with Space Oddity, he had the public's attention and used it for good. In 1971, he released Hunky Dory, which featured the hit Changes and was a precursor to Bowie's next album, the Glamorous album, The Rise and the Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, also known as Ziggy Stratus. Ziggy Stratus was a concept album about the titular Ziggy Stratus, the rock and roll messiah, and his band, the Spiders from Mars. To perform this album, Bowie would dress up as Ziggy when he performed. It was an instant success, and Bowie would continue his career with singles like The Gene Genie, Rebel Rebel, and Young Americans. However, he took a turn in 1977 when he released Low, the first of a so-called Berlin trilogy. The first half of Low was short, punk-influenced rock songs, and the other half were more abstract, longer, slower tracks. The album, along with the others in the trilogy, attracted mixed reviews all the time, but they would turn out to be revolutionary in the art rock scene. It also spawned arguably Bowie's biggest hit ever, the song Heroes, about lovers separated by the Berlin Wall. Another can't-miss name of the 70s was Bruce Springsteen, also known as The Boss. An appropriate name for one whose music was so commanding, his impact was so large, that he is now known as an American treasure of sorts. He embodied the symbol of American dream, working hard to make it big. He was both an independent singer-songwriter and the leader of one of the greatest bands of the era. But how does his story start? Well, I'm glad to tell you. From the beginning, Springsteen was a charming and sincere lad, and he released his first two albums on Columbia Records, where his lyrics about his home state, New Jersey, featured prominently. And while his first two albums impressed critics, they didn't perform very well commercially. And so Columbia said that he had, in Springsteen's words, one last chance to make it real. So in 1975, Bruce, along with his backing band, the E Street Band, released Born to Run, one of the most enduring musical statements of the era. It featured slow, passionate love songs and fast songs about freedom and escaping the confines of society. Needless to say, it was a hit, or we wouldn't be talking about him right now, would we? It is now regarded as one of the best albums of all time, and it didn't stop. The next album of Springsteen's, Darkness on the Edge of Town, was structured mainly the same way as Born to Run, and was another critical and commercial hit. Bruce had hit his stride, and by the late 70s, everyone was wondering what would be next. Queen was one of the most unique and influential bands of the 70s, and of all time. Rooted in progressive and psychedelic rock, the band formed in 1970 and in 1973 made their self-titled debut album. Their second album, titled Queen 2, was where the band started to gain some traction with single Seven Seas of Rye. Their third album, Sheer Heart Attack, however, introduced Queen to an international audience with the song Killer Queen. Despite all this, it was Queen's fourth album that blew them up into superstars. They remained for the rest of the 70s. The album, which was titled A Night at the Opera and released in 1975, featured prog rock ballads, pop and hard rock songs, and songs inspired by the Music Hall of Victorian era. However, the album's centerpiece was certainly its main track, Bohemian Rhapsody. Queen's most famous song loosely chronicles a young murderer singing to his mother and featuring Queen's iconic vocal harmonies and production techniques that were unheard of at the time. It was accompanied by one of the world's first music videos ever. This album was a big hit with listeners and music critics and laid the groundwork for the remainder of Queen's decade. Queen's widely anticipated next album, A Day at the Races, featured a familiar blend of music genres featured on the previous album, and was almost as big of a hit as its predecessor. With the lead single, Somebody to Love, a gospel ballad that has prominently featured in many films and TV shows, News of the World, Queen's 1977 album, was more hard rock-oriented, due to the arrival of punk rock, which we'll discuss in a minute. The big singles from this album were a side called We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions. Big example of arena rock. Queen's last album in the 1970s was Jazz, an album that was similar to News of the World in terms of music structure. However, the album's lead single, Bicycle Race, attracted the controversy for featuring music video of nude women holding a bicycle race. Despite the band using special effects to cover up the nudity, however, it would be an understatement to say that the band had a good decade. It launched them into the stratosphere of rock stardom and would take a lot to bring them down. Before this episode ends, we'll discuss three of the prevailing music genres in the 1970s: punk rock, prog rock, and the new wave / art rock. This segment will discuss prog rock. Prog rock is short for progressive rock and was most popular in the early 70s. Pioneers of the genre include King Crimson, Rush, Genius, Yes, and most notably Pink Floyd. The genre basically encompassed any type of music, as long as it was different. Artists such as Genius and Yes would create 20-plus minute long songs about fantasies, and artists like Pink Floyd and Rush could create albums that change the definition of music. But all of them were prog rock. The genre was known for being non-radio accessible, and that was one of the reasons that prog rock mostly died out in the mid-70s. However, essential albums to listen to from the genre were all of Pink Floyd's releases during the 70s. In Court of the Crimson King by Crimson King, Fragile and the Yes album by Yes, and Selling England by the Pound by Genesis. Arguably, the main reason that prog rock died out in the mid-70s is because it was murdered by punk rock. Punk rock made its arrival in 1976 with the releases of the Ramones' debut album, bluntly titled Ramones, and featuring a black and white photo of the band on a street corner. It announced that punk was not made in lavish studios with endless time and money, like prog rock. It was made on the streets about sex, drugs, and murder. The biggest punk bands of the 70s were the Ramones, the Sex Pistols, the Clash, and the Stooges. The music was short and quick, utilizing few chords and repetitive riffs. However, it did create some of the most iconic music of the era, and led a new generation of teenagers to rebel against society. Punk would go on to influence pop punk in the 90s and 2000s, as well as many other subgenres of rock. Essential albums include Ramones and Rockets to Russia by the Ramones, the Sex Pistols' only album, London Calling, and The Clash by The Clash, and Pink Floyd by Wire. Emerging at the same time as punk was the new wave and art rock movement. David Bowie influenced this genre with his Berlin Trilogy in the late 1970s, and big artists of this genre included Talking Heads, Joy Division, Peter Gabriel, Elvis Costello, and The Police, and many more. This genre showed what music would be mainly popular in the 1980s, and was a blend of pop, disco, and electronic music. It was almost the opposite of punk rock, yet both coexisted in the late 70s. It could be simple or abstract, mysterious or plain as day. It didn't matter. All of this was new, and it lasted through the next decade with ease. Essential albums from this genre include Everything by Talking Heads and The Police, David Bowie's Berlin Trilogy, or Low, Heroes, and Lodger, Joy Division's Unknown Pleasures, Elvis Costello's late 70s output, and Peter Gabriel's first four solo studio albums. He was the frontman of Genesis before he left it. This is the last segment of this episode, so let's end it with a basic chronological overview of this event. In 1970, it was the iconic Isle of Wight Festival that linked multiple members of the 27 Club, as well as the breakup of the Beatles in 1971, was Led Zeppelin's iconic fourth untitled album in 1972, David Bowie's released Ziggy Stratus and gains massive amount of fame, and prog rock begins its emerge in 1973. Prog has its heyday with Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd coming out, regarded as the best prog album of all time. Also, Elton John releases Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, one of his best albums ever. In 1975, Bob Dylan makes his resurgence to fame with Blood on the Tracks, and Queen and Bruce Springsteen gain international fame with the albums A Night at the Opera and Born to Run, respectively. In 1976, the Ramones arrived, killing most of prog rock with their debut album in 1977. Punk celebrates its birth with debut albums by The Wire, The Clash, and The Sex Pistols arriving in that year. David Bowie also starts his Berlin Trilogy, and Billy Joel releases The Stranger in 1978. Queen and Bruce Springsteen released their albums, and a new wave takes over radio stations in 1979. New Wave continues. The Clash released the double album London Calling, one of the best punk albums ever, and Pink Floyd released the rock opera, The Wall. That wasn't so basic, was it? Well, neither was the 70s. I regret that we couldn't talk more about singer-songwriters like Elton John and Billy Joel, or about Pink Floyd more. But we do not have much time on our hands right now. However, just you listening helps us, as we are sponsored by Anchor, a podcast-making platform, and a lifesaver for these projects. However, there is a monthly donation available if you'd like, and that helps us support the show, and maybe make an extended version of all of these episodes, covering more topics, more music artists, and more rock music. Again, thank you for listening. Have a beautiful day.